Hello, everybody, and welcome to the inaugural episode of this OceanLife.tv podcast. I'm your host, Josh Peterson. Today's episode is brought to you by Shearwater Paddle Boards, builders of custom prone paddle boards and surfboards in San Francisco, California. Check them out at shearwaterpaddleboards.com. In today's show, we talk with Nick Franco, a world-class waterman who's competed in the Molokai 2 Oahu World Paddleboard Championship for many years and winning his division multiple times on boards that he shaped himself. We talk with Nick about paddling, surfing, shaping boards, diving, and hear some great stories about his ocean life. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this OceanLife.tv podcast. I'm your host, Josh Peterson, sitting here with my personal favorite friend and legend, Nick Franco. Nick, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Nick, I want to start by sharing a great story, my first memory of you, which is, you probably know what this is.
I don't.
Paddling in the Davenport Downwinder for your first time.
Yeah.
For folks who don't know, Davenport Downwinder is a legendary paddleboard race from Davenport to Santa Cruz.
It's the best race there is.
14 miles, cold, sharky, kelpy, gnarly. I think it was like 2008 or 9.
Yeah.
And I see this guy up with a board. Was it an Eaton?
No, it was a Craig Richmond. Yeah. And I had gotten it off of Craigslist from this guy for like $600. But to me, it was like the raddest board ever, because before that, I'd been paddling in like an old 1970s lifeguard rescue board. So
And what did you have taped to the deck? What was your hydration for that one?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
You had a half water bottle duct tape.
No, I actually showed up with nothing. Just thinking I didn't need it because I had no idea what I was getting into. And I had like a bunch of different guys from the Ghost Riders crew come up to me and just be like, what are you doing? And so basically they convinced me that I needed some sort of water. So I ran back to I had an old pickup truck at the time, and I ran back to the truck and grabbed a half full crystal geyser bottle that had like bubbly water in it.
And I
duct taped it to the deck of the board. And
I remember thinking, oh, great, at least I'll beat one guy, this kook. And it turns out that you smoked me anyway. So look, since then, you've become a world-class athlete.
Oh, thanks.
You've paddled Molokai to Oahu. I'm going to let you tell us how many times you've placed high on the podium. You've won your age group. You were the fastest, I believe, American prone paddler.
Yeah,
last couple years. Legit stuff. So take us from the day on the beach with the Richmond board with a duct tape water bottle to now, where you've had this great career of competitive paddleboarding for Molokai to Oahu, Catalina, and other races. Tell us about that.
Wow. Well, I think it's actually, it kind of started long before that. I just remember being a kid and, growing up surfing with my dad and, him having just made sure that I was in the ocean starting from a young kid. And I just remember doing basically every school project I ever had assigned to me on like the history of surfing or the history of or surfing or whatever. And I remember being really enamored as a kid with the really like the guys from way back that were the surfers, divers, paddlers, just all around swimmer, water guys, like hardcore water guys. And I remember reading those stories about those guys and, just the adventures that they would go on. And so that was always really appealing to me. And to be more than just a surfer, but to kind of do as much of that stuff as I could.
Yeah, be strong in the water in a lot of different disciplines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I remember I remember like reading the story about like Gene Tarzan Smith, like paddling solo from Oahu to Kauai.
Yeah.
Like back before anybody thought that you could even do that.
Yeah.
Things like that,
Literally.
Or like people like George Downing doing things they do in surfing big waves and winning paddle races and being divers and, you know, being fishermen and surfers and just everything. And so I remember, like, I think I was in high school and my dad had a 10-6 longboard blank in his garage, and I basically, when he was gone, I just started cutting into it and made what I thought was a paddleboard.
Nice.
And it was like a 10-4,
yeah,
just weird needle pointed thing that I like made a fin out of plywood and like glassed it on, and it was just ragged and just gnarly thing. But I remember taking it out and paddling it in the bay, in the San Francisco Bay, and just thinking I was on my way.
Yeah, you know? That was it.
And then then I remember getting that lifeguard board and that I found behind like my buddy's girlfriend's dad's house. It was just like in the bushes and being completely overgrown, and grabbed that thing and thought that was the next step up. And then when I got the Richmond board, I like, that was like my next step up, because it was real and it wasn't, you know, it was,
yeah, it's a legit paddleboard.
It looked like a paddleboard. Yeah. And at that point I had decided I wanted to start racing. And so I had been doing a little bit of training and then showed up at your guys, the Ghost Riders paddle, you know, and realized I had no idea what I was doing whatsoever, but just had the desire to like keep doing it and to keep challenging myself, you know, and keep trying these new things. And I remember going from that to then joining you guys on the Monterey Bay paddle across the bay, and not knowing if I was even going to be able to make it across the bay, and then doing that and that. I mean, basically just taking every experience that I had with you guys and with the Ghost Riders, and just like taking that back up to San Francisco and back up to the bay, and just kind of doing my own things like by myself here and there, and then trying another race here I remember like driving down to San Diego the first time to do a San Diego race, and it just kind of grew. And
so what was it about paddling? Because there's 12-mile race, there's 6-mile races, 14-mile races, and there's 32-mile races, right?
Yeah.
Was it the competitive, like trying to be faster than the guy next to you, or was it the mental and physical challenge of like, you know, going from 14 miles to 32 crossing the Cayuga Channel?
Yeah.
It's a different beast. What about it? Like, why does that look attractive, that race, to you? And why did you do it every year?
I mean, I don't know. Like, it started out, obviously, it's just like a thing to add to the repertoire and a way to stay in the ocean all the time, even when the surf was bad, and just as like a way to like cross train for surfing, to be ready for winter and be ready for, you know, to push myself into bigger surf and stuff like that. And then, and I've always like, been an athlete my whole life. Like, my dad, ever since I was a little kid, like put me into sports, and because he knew, he just saw in me that I was like a really competitive person. And so I've always tried to be the best athlete that I can be. That
competitive bone.
Yeah. And so then once I saw there was this whole competitive side to paddling, like, just got the bug.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, it's like doing the Monterey Bay crossing and seeing that you could do these huge crossings. Then it started to be like, well, what other crossings are there? And then that, I mean, I'd read about the, you know, the Molokai race since its inception. And funny thing was, I had actually been on like a family vacation to Molokai.
Oh, wow.
In like, I think it was like 99 or something. So still, the race was still pretty early on.
Yeah.
And I remember being at Kualoa and just looking around, and there was all these paddlers there. And I remember like a few different guys came up to me and were like, "Are you doing the paddle tomorrow?" And I was like, "What?
Crazy.
What paddle? I don't even know what you're talking about." But then I realized what was happening, and I kind of knew I wanted to do that someday.
Yeah.
And then once I got into it and realized, because I'd kind of forgotten about it, and then I realized what it was and came back to it, and then it was like, okay, this is like the ultimate. Like,
now, your first year at Molokai, was that 2011?
I think so. I don't know. I think so.
I think it was, because I remember seeing you, because that's the year I did it. And I remember seeing you on Oahu.
Yeah.
And we bumped into each other in Waikiki.
Yeah.
And we're like, hey, what's up? Hey, I'll see you on Molokai.
Right.
And I remember I took, like you, took my escort boat across with my board. But I did it 2 days in advance.
Right.
And, you know, just because I wanted to see the water, we did it. It's gorgeous and it's gnarly and you're glad to get there and get off the boat. And then I remember expecting to see you the next day, the day before the race, and I didn't.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, maybe you're staying somewhere else. And then that night at the dinner, I was looking for you and didn't see you.
Yeah.
And until the next morning, about 30 minutes before the start, I remember seeing you coming out of the bushes like a homeless dude with your amazing wife, Sarah. How did you tell us that story of why you ended up in the bushes sleeping on the Kualakoi beach before the race of your first Molokai?
So I never actually even made it to the bushes or the beach. The whole thing. So Molokai is a logistical nightmare in one sense. Like, if you can make it to the starting line of that race, you've won in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? And everybody, every paddler who's ever done it has some story. And there's varying degrees of what happened, but you know, everybody has their story. But yeah, basically I had no idea the first time, and I had just met my now wife, who like maybe 4 months earlier, five months earlier.
Wow, that early. Oh man.
And I was like, hey, you want to go to Hawaii with me? I'm gonna go do this race, it'd be pretty fun. Like, and she was like, yeah, that'd be great. And I was like, I kind of need somebody to come with me on an escort boat. Do you want to come? She's like, oh, that'd be great. So we like, you know, you go through the process, you hire your escort boat because every paddler needs one. And everything seemed good. And turns out,
you took the boat across.
Yeah.
To
so
Molokai.
What we know now is that you fly across and you meet your boat over there just because the amount of like just the physical taxation of taking the boat across the day before for like 4 or 5 hours just wrecks you for the next day. So, but we didn't know that. So we met up with our boat captain a couple days prior and we're like, oh, what time are we leaving? He said, oh, you know, I think we'll leave sometime in the afternoon on Saturday. Race is Sunday morning. Yeah. And we're not knowing any better. We're like, okay, we'll meet you at such and such harbor on Sand Island and whatever, we'll go from there. Find out that everybody else that's taking their boats across is leaving at like 4 in the morning, you know? And I'm like, oh, that's cool. I don't have to wake up so early. So what I didn't realize was that everybody leaves super early to try and get across before the wind kicks up super gnarly. Because you're basically slamming into a headwind the whole way.
Let me pause there for a moment. So for folks who don't know Molokai to Oahu, it's the Kaiʻiwi Channel, which is called the Channel of Bones, because it's crossed up wind, swell, current. It's really gnarly. And it's like 8 to 10 foot seas and I think like 15 to 25 knot winds like almost every day. And anybody who takes their boat across from Oahu to Molokai is insane. People fly because it just beats you to death. But you don't know that the first time, you just figure it out.
So yeah.
So you're in the channel now.
Yeah, so we went late in the day and the wind was already blowing. And we left from Sand Island, which is pretty far away from most people launch in Hawaii Kai, which is like more of a straight shot. Where we left adds an extra 10 miles.
More south shore?
Yeah, like more towards like in Honolulu.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that way. Okay.
So we added an extra 10 miles and then added the channel crossing. So we get across to about halfway and it's been a really gnarly ride. And We have like our stash of water bottles for hydration for the next day and, you know, a little bit of food for just the crossing. But, you know, we're going to eat. There's a dinner provided mm-hmm. over on the island on Molokai. Well, we are we're about halfway over, and all of a sudden we kind of notice the boat's really struggling and listing to one side. And it's a small boat. It's probably like 20 feet. Maybe less. It's small.
Yeah.
Little catamaran, like power cat. And we realize the captain's just like, all of a sudden, he's like, okay, we're taking on water. And we're like in the middle of the channel. And I'm with my new girlfriend and him and his stepson or something. And he's like, listen, we need to start pumping the water out. So he's got a manual bilge. And so he tells his deckhand to start using the manual bilge. Well, as he's doing that, we hit some seas and he loses the bilge over the side.
No.
Yeah. And we just watch it float away. Gone.
Oh.
So the next plan of action is to take our water jugs, like we have those like 1 gallon jugs.
Yeah.
And dump them, cut them open and use them as balers. So wow. Me and my wife are like bailing. Meanwhile, captain's trying to figure out what's going on. And then it basically progresses or just into a really bad situation where we lose an engine and we're taking on water and a mayday call goes out to the Coast Guard.
Oh, man.
And the best part about it is that my family is my like mom and dad and sister and brother are all on Oahu and they're all staying at a hotel and they're sitting at the pool at the hotel and they see a Coast Guard chopper go ripping overhead.
Oh,
and then they go, oh man, I hope that's not Nick and Sarah. Like,
jokingly while they drink their Mai Tai. Yeah.
Anyway, it turns out it was for us.
Oh.
And man, I got to say the Coast Guard was so rad. They came, hovered like 10 feet above us, dropped a rescue swimmer onto our boat.
Yeah.
With an emergency bilge pump. They bailed us out. The swimmer, I wish I could remember his name, but such a cool guy, stuck with us the whole time and got us in good shape. Coast Guard and Maui Fire Department ended up coming out and escorting us the last like
really
10 miles into Molokai.
Whoa. They made that crossing just to make sure you got there.
Yeah, and then the helicopter came and picked up the rescue swimmer. But man, like so cool. Got us there. We were so just...
What time did you get in? It was late.
Oh, we got in... We left around... I think we left around 1 in the afternoon. We got into Molokai at 12:30.
Oh, man.
So it was a long day on the water.
About 7 hours before start time.
Yeah. And there was like multiple times in the middle of the channel where I was like, okay, we have a paddleboard. And I was like, Sarah and I were like talking this over.
Yeah.
We have a paddleboard. We had brought a surfboard because we knew she was going to have to paddle in.
Yeah.
You know? And so we're like, worst comes to worst, the boat sinks. Like, we can paddle. Like, I know we can paddle to wherever we need to go.
We will paddle and make
it. We'll be fine. Yeah. Like, but just like going through that with like a new girlfriend. It's like, wow. I'm amazed she didn't leave me.
So after that, did you know, like, I need to marry this girl because if she can stand by me through a sinking boat in the middle of
pretty much
Molokai Channel.
Yeah. And keep her cool the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, keep her cool.
I remember seeing you guys and I was like, what are you doing? Why are you in the bushes? And you told me that story in like 2 minutes because the start was about to go down.
But so that's the thing. We never even got to the bushes because what happened was we got in to Molokai. It was dark. We had no idea where we were. And so we ended up just sleeping in like on top of the guy's fish bags in the front of his boat.
Oh, wow.
And the whole, and the guy told us, well, my boat's like, it's screwed. We can't, you can't use it. So you can't race.
Right.
And I'm thinking, oh man, I just put this whole year of training in and like this whole deal and first one, and I don't even get to do it. And whatever, Sarah and I share a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for dinner. And then the next morning, somehow he had figured out a way to like get one engine working. And so basically up until, like a half an hour before, he was like, you can't paddle, you can't paddle, you can't paddle. And then half an hour before he goes, okay, go to the beach, go to the start. We're gonna try. And if we can do it, then great. But if the boat craps out, we'll have to pull you.
Yeah. You're like, and
all of a sudden I was like, oh, okay. So I just got everything together and jammed to the beach, and that's where I saw you. And then like literally jammed to the start line and did it.
Crazy. But that event, so that even with that, all the troubles, the next year you're like, okay, we're not doing logistics that way. We're going to take a flight, all the boards. So then when did you first reach major success in your category? Because you were racing, what, like the 30 to 40 age group?
Yeah, so I started.
What year did you really like peak and really sort of come on strong?
I raced 2 years in the stock division, which is like 12 foot boards, and then the third year I decided I wanted to go unlimited, and that's when I decided I would make my own board, and which was a whole nother hilarious debacle.
We'll get to that one.
But then I had that first year on unlimited, and then I had two more years of I guess it would be 3 years ago is when I first started, things started clicking.
So 15.
Yeah.
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 15, yep. 16, 17.
Right.
Have been solid
and
years.
You came on strong. You won your division all 3 years?
I think so.
I know too.
I know that last year and the year before I did. And I think the year before that, I came in second.
Yeah.
I came third in my age group, second in my age group, and then I won my age group and won my age group. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, right, right. So. That's amazing, man. I mean, for folks who probably hear about the race, maybe have been to it or seen it, it's a big deal. I mean, especially, we were talking about this earlier, the caliber of athlete that shows up is intense. I mean, you get the Jamie Mitchells, the Kai Lennies, you get Annabelle Andersons and Candace Appleby, women, men. You get Dave Kalamas. I mean, you get incredible people. And for you, Nick, to have battled against so many amazing athletes and done that well is great. Now, I've seen your training regimen, and it's intense. And how would you characterize it? It's kind of like a cross training, right? You're swimming, you're paddling a lot, but you're doing biking, you're doing other things too. What does your training kind of look like in general?
Yeah, so I've had a lot of help along the way, and it's been a lot of trial and error. It's funny, like, there's nobody, it's interesting, how to put this? It's interesting, like, coming from where I am from, paddling is not a thing. Like, nobody, it's starting to gain some momentum. But, like, you know, Santa Cruz is the furthest north that paddling really exists. Yep. And like I said, that's starting to change, but still in very small increments. So everything has been completely trial and error.
Right.
And so I've been lucky enough to have some really amazing help from people who aren't familiar with paddling, but are familiar with other types of training.
Endurance, athlete, stuff. Yep.
And then I have been really lucky to have some, in the past 2 years, I've had some really amazing help from a friend of mine, Keone Watson, over in Hawaii.
Right, a legendary waterman himself.
Legend, who's been able to really guide me with some training.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of things that I've found that didn't work, and learned a lot from that. And now I've sort of found that it's just kind of, in a way, it's kind of common sense, but in order to be a real, to be a good paddler, it's good to be a good all-around athlete.
Yeah, you end up using a lot of different muscles, especially that knee paddling to laying down.
Exactly.
You're really working your thighs, and who thought when you surf, you don't really do that.
Yeah, so like, you know, in my training, I try to do, obviously, you've got to do your distance and your interval work on the paddleboard, but you've also got to, I do a lot of running and cycling just to keep the leg muscles strong. I do a lot of swimming and body surfing.
Yeah.
And then also just surfing in general also really it helps. I mean, that's why we got into this in the first place.
That's right, to stay in shape. Yeah, we should. For winter.
Yeah, you might as well keep the surfing throughout, you know?
Now, what about, so that the physical piece I get, and the tactics of that, as you said, people try different things depending on their body type and where they're weaker and stronger. But what about the mental aspect, right? Because when you're paddling for 32 miles, which might be 5 hours, 6 hours, it gets tough being in that bright blue water. You get a little bit weird in the head. You're looking at a big rock and it's not getting bigger. You get in a spot where the current's strong, stronger, and you're... It's a big mental mind game. How do you...
For sure.
Can you prepare your mind for that, and or what goes through your mind when you're doing these, these things?
Well, you have to prepare your mind for it because, I mean, your body's a pretty amazing thing, but your mind is the conduit that allows your body to do what it does. And you... Yeah, especially in a distance events, or even just distance training, or just, you know, if you call it fun, like distance fun event paddles or whatever it is, you really do have to work on your mental side. And for different people do it differently. For me, I use a lot of experience for... I guess a good way to put it is that, like, what I've found is that paddling came very easy to me just based on being a surfer and being in the water and being comfortable. Competitive paddling for me has been a long game. And part of me being able to be as successful as I have has been from having really terrible experiences and getting through them. And also from looking around and seeing that a lot of other paddlers have also been in it for a long time. And have, so there's a lot, you learn a lot from yourself by putting yourself through these situations and through, you know, whether it's a really intense training workout or whether it's crossing something like the Monterey Bay for the first time, or doing a Molokai and having like just the worst experience you could ever have. And thinking that this is the last time you're ever going to paddle a paddleboard. But pushing through that and like looking back and learning from going through, going into those dark places. Like I have had I had a Molokai race where I went so dark and I bonked so hard to the point that I was literally just telling myself, you are the worst human to ever walk the face of planet Earth. What are you doing? Like, you should just roll off this board and drown. Like, it's, you're worthless, you know? But then sticking with it and going through all that darkness and then coming out on the other side and literally going from like wanting to cry but was so mad and that I couldn't even cry, you know, just like so mad, to coming out this imaginary line this other side and just like it's laughing, like
reborn
like whole new person laughing and then going back like oh man, this one time I just like it was like a roller coaster of just being giddily happy and then diving back into darkness, sheer utter darkness.
It's amazing. I've noticed the same, and I haven't done half of the endurance things you have, but had the same experience whereby you start your anticipation and you're having fun, and then you kind of, you're into it and you say these weird thoughts. Your mind can just go in the strangest of places. Especially when you're looking at some point in the horizon, like Oahu, you're like, oh, okay. And there's Sonoma Bay. And then you're like, why isn't it getting any bigger? I have my watch on, it's been an hour, but that thing's not getting, and your mind just goes, but then you get through it and you want to cry and you get knocked off your board. But then all of a sudden you're like, wow, I'm almost there. And you get happier. And then you're, there's China Wall or whatever endurance thing. You come in this really deep, dark pit. And you come out and it's this really strange, exhilarating feeling of like, you just blew out all this weird negative right. emotion in yourself. It's just a, it's a really, I get why people do crazy endurance
yeah.
things, because it is the ultimate test of your body. Yes. But like you said, it's a machine. It'll keep going. It's yeah. your head. I think yeah. at least for me and most folks, yeah. that is the limiting factor.
Yeah. And it's about learning from those experiences and knowing that you can push beyond a situation like that and come out stronger on the other side.
Yeah, that's it.
And you have one of those terrible experiences, and if you're willing to do it again,
yeah.
you know that that might happen, but you know that you made it through as well.
Right.
And that, like, and I mean, not to get super cheesy, but it totally translates to life
it
in
does.
A lot of ways, because you're like, things can be really terrible, but you're going to push through yeah. and it's going to get better.
In day to day, there's very few things in life that make you go through a process like that.
Yeah.
Very, normally they're super heavy, like big, big things.
Yeah.
And here you have a chance to like really kind of break yourself down, build yourself back up for the better.
Yeah.
You know, now
we should also note that Josh has done it twice. So well, he speaks from experience. So
I did it,
he knows.
I did it one and a half times because I did it on T in the second.
still twice across the channel.
So. Thank you. Now, one other piece about you, and you mentioned it. You've been extremely successful competing, being top in your class. But what's, I think, even more special is you've done it on your own boards. You
yeah.
shape your own paddle boards. You mentioned you did the early one. I've got one sitting here I'm looking at now that's my favorite. I'll come enamor about it in a moment. But I don't think maybe outside of other paddleboard shapers who we know, there's probably very few people, I could probably count them on my hand, who've probably paddled that thing, that race, or any race, at that world stage level, done really well on a board that they've shaped. So now,
yeah.
tell us about what you're doing now with your paddleboards. Shearwater paddle boards. We'll have links yeah. and stuff in the show notes. But tell us where you started. I know you hacked your dad's 10-6 into a paddle board. But with
yeah.
making competitive boards for Molokai and other flat water races, where are you at today? And what's your philosophy behind boards? And just talk about that.
Yeah. Well, man, it's been an interesting road for sure. I made what I thought was a paddleboard out of my dad's longboard blank. When I got into paddling, I got that Richmond off of Craigslist.
Yeah.
And not knowing anything about paddleboards really, yeah. but I was like, oh, this is cool. And it worked. And I thought it was great. And I paddled that for about a year, just doing little local races and stuff, or I guess California races, and I knew I wanted to get more serious about it, and so I actually just cold called Craig Richmond out of the blue and just said, "Hey, I'm so and so, like I'm Nick Franco, and I got one of your boards, and I'm gonna be doing I'm getting into this, and I'm gonna paddle, and." What do you think about making me paddleboards
yeah.
for the next upcoming seasons? And I think he kind of thought, who the heck
who
is this?
You, man? Yeah.
yeah. But I kind of was persistent about it and eventually got him to agree to make me some boards. And but the caveat was that I had to be willing to be like his test monkey in a way,
yeah.
you know? And so he had ideas for boards that were kind of outside of the norm and wanted to see how they would work, and I was game. So
yeah.
So he was instrumental in my whole idea of trying new things, trying different things. Because paddleboards haven't really changed much in terms of design. I mean, there's obviously been small tweaks and stuff, but like ever since they changed from that sort of kook box,
yeah,
like hollow model to what Joe Quigg started making, where he started actually making more modernized, like whole design of a paddleboard. Since then, they haven't changed all that much, static, you know?
Yeah.
And I saw what was going on around me, and, you know, obviously they work, and, you know, there's, and like for people like, I mean, obviously Joe Bark has been doing amazing things with his paddle boards, and they're some of the fastest boards around, and they're doing great, and have been, and like hats off to him for what he's been doing. And like, yeah, tons of respect to him. And, but I just kind of saw sort of an opportunity to try some different things.
Yeah.
And so I started kind of looking at paddleboard design, and then started looking at boat design, and started looking at, you know, a guy I was training with, was, his name is Joel Comer, and he was a really, really talented stand-up paddler. And he was like the only other guy that was interested in doing what I was doing. And so we were training together, and I started looking at some of his boards, and then started looking at like surfboard design, because I've always shaped surfboards, and was shaping surfboards for a living as well, and kind of brought in sort of, you know, my favorite thing to shape is guns, and so
was big boards,
starting to look at like gun design and how that could possibly translate, and just bringing in all these different ideas of design.
Yeah.
And coming from a very, you know, I'm in no way like an educated designer or do have any sort of like background in like hydrodynamics or anything like that, but just sort of knowing what works through making surfboards and, you know, boats and things, just started kind of blending all those ideas together and started to just create something a little different, you know? And definitely like the first few years that I was doing it, they got a lot of funny looks, and people were always like, what are you making? Like, this is, these boards are weird. And is that like a stand-up board that's way too narrow or what? You know, like just people were kind of just tripping out on them and not really knowing, not really following what I was doing. But I just kind of kept with it and kept evolving them and kept like trying them. And luckily I had a few people that have been able to help me along the way, like yourself and like Josh Peterson. And I mean, you're Josh Ryan.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. And, Josh Peterson, Josh Ryan. And then like, you know, I was able to have like Pat Shaughnessy paddle some of the boards for a while. And then myself, and I was like the biggest guinea pig. I was the biggest guinea pig out of all of them. Cause I felt like if I couldn't paddle them, then I wasn't going to let you guys paddle them first, you know? Yeah. So,
Well, what was cool too about watching that transition was, and I really admire you for this, was it would have been easy to build boards that everybody was expected, you know? As you said, when you started rolling these things out, everybody's like, whoa, this is different, because we're all used to a very static paddleboard design. And it would have been easy to kind of copy that, maybe tweak it slightly, and then just have a company that just made boards that kind of look like the stuff that was already out there. But what was really cool about what you've done is you wanted to change the way paddleboards are made, because there's a thousand different ways to do everything, right?
Yeah.
And it was great to see you stick with your design, refine it, but not go towards what has been built in the past, which again, great boards, killer, I've had them, it's all good. And really coming out with a design of board that's, it's different. Is it better? Is it worse? No, it's another way of paddling, and it's smooth. And in certain cases, I think it is better. I mean, I love the flat bottom. I love the boxy rails. Like some of the ways, things you're doing, I'm starting to see the SUP guys, their technology is so far advanced because there's 4,000 companies. That's cool. But you've been able to add some designs to your boards that A, are different than what's out there, and B, really proven that there's other ways to make boards that are really comfortable, really fast, really stable.
Yeah. And like other people, you know, obviously like I do a lot of, like in terms of bottom contours, my flat water boards have a flatter bottom, and my downwind boards have double concaves running through them. And other people have done that before. It's not like I'm coming up with anything groundbreaking, but just the way, just trying to see how to incorporate those ideas into the boards that I'm building based off of what has been done in the past and what's worked and what hasn't and what's worked for me and what's worked for you guys and everybody that's paddled them. I've just been able to maintain sort of a, hopefully that open line of communication of getting feedback and just, you know, it's all about taking all the pieces from all the different areas and combining them in order to hopefully come up with something that's gonna maybe not change the game, but change an aspect of the game.
Absolutely. No, that's cool. And that's the thing with prone paddleboarding or traditional paddleboarding, you know, I think as everybody knows listening to this, it's your arms.
Yeah.
You know, you're not standing up. They're not wide boards. They're low profile, skinny, because you're laying down, you're on your knees paddling with two arms. And there are, you can count the number of prone paddleboard companies on your right hand.
Yeah, really, there's not that many, yeah.
And so if you think about that, the progression of technology, there's not a huge market, so there's not a lot of companies.
There's not a lot, right? Not enough crazy people in the world.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's so refreshing. While there's a lot of SUP companies, it's great. They're trying to kind of differentiate from each other based on their technology, based on their shapes and designs. So there's a ton of them doing that. Whereas with prone, there's very few people. So for you to come in and do it, is just, it's cool. And I have this 18 foot 6 inch flat water. I call it the battleship, I call it the Cadillac too. It's like as comfortable as my bed. I love paddling that thing, and it's like got me across the bay. It's just awesome. Now, so Shearwater paddleboards, you're based in the city,
based in San Francisco in the Outer Sunset.
Which
is not a hotbed for prone paddling, but that's where we are.
It's growing though, which is neat to see.
Yeah.
And I think folks will be seeing more of these boards spread around, definitely California, Hawaii coming soon. Now, other piece to kind of transition into is you're a diver. You free dive, you spearfish.
Yeah.
You've done all that stuff too. Touch on that a little bit. How, you know, it's another part of your well-rounded being in the ocean with your ocean life, you know, how'd you get into it? And, you know, what, how does that compare to your love and drive for paddling and
all that? I got into, I mean, it's, again, it's just another aspect of being in the ocean and being around it. I mean, I grew up fishing as a little kid and had like some great mentors that kind of like took me fishing and had always threatened to take me diving, but it never really worked out. And I was lucky enough to grow up with a really, really great guy named Dave Benet, who has been like tried and true friend since we were little kids. And he got really into diving of all sorts when he went to college at UC Santa Cruz. And he now like runs the whole scientific diving program there. So he was the one that first took me abdiving up in the Sonoma coast. And ever since that, I mean, I remember being terrible at it in the beginning and just like being such a rookie and having no idea what I was doing, wearing all the wrong gear and like, you know, just everything was wrong. But kept going with him and started going on my own and ended up just falling in love with just being underwater and in that whole, it's just a whole nother world and being able to swim through the kelp forests and, you know, and then on top of that, we got to do things like have abalone feasts and have fish feasts and just be, like I say, just another aspect of being in the ocean and just doing something that's so fun, just unbridled fun.
It is. It's so pure and free.
Yeah.
It's like those long solo paddles by yourself where you're out of the world. You're just in your own little space.
Yeah.
Same thing underwater. You know, it's like this it's so meditative. It's so burly, gnarly, especially cold, sharky, you know, all
the stuff. Oh, yeah, there are times when the nerves are, like, through the roof for sure. But, also
part
just
of it.
Part of, like, calming those down and then being able to just enjoy your time.
Yeah.
In a whole nother world.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is. It truly is. Now, so diving, surf, and all that. Now, the other piece that we have yet to comment on is you're also a father now. So,
yeah.
You got a wonderful wife who stuck with you being stuck in the multi-channel. Now I have a great young boy named Leon.
Yeah.
Now, how does that. You told these great stories of your life in the water, paddling's individual thing. You have buddies, diving, surfing, all that. Now you've got a boy, you know, and maybe others coming soon.
Yeah.
At some point, how does that change the game for you in terms of your look, your emphasis on the ocean, and now it's probably maybe incorporating others in your, you know.
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, yeah. Like, on an immediate level, it's definitely changed the like my training program has been pretty hilarious this year.
pretty ad hoc.
Yeah, I'm not an Instagram aficionado, but I just recently thought that if I was, I should do a post of like a stroller with like a paddleboard and like some running shoes and like you know, just like, and hit my kid, just like being like, this is my biggest training tool right now.
Mocha,
you know,
here I come.
Exactly. But you know, in my immediate life, I've still, luckily I have an amazing wife and an amazing little kid too. And I've been able to piece it together just in a much more, fly by the seat of your pants way. But in the long term, I mean, my hope is that we get to share all of these aspects of surfing, paddling, diving, swimming, making sandcastles, whatever it is, like with my kids, and I hope that they're into it. I think my worst nightmare is that my kid gets really into doing math problems or something.
Doesn't like sandy feet.
Exactly.
I know, how'd that be.
Yeah. So, I mean,
well, based on what I could see of Leon, you guys take him to the beach
all the time. Yeah, I know. Like, we're like forcing
he's
it on.
He's locked in. He doesn't even know it yet.
But it's super. It's pretty funny because we'll like dip his feet in the water. I mean, he's young. He's only like 8 months. So we'll just dip his feet in the water and he looks at us, gives us this sideways look like, what are you guys doing right now?
This is really cold.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, I know I'm really lucky that my wife loves to surf as well and has always grown up around the ocean and has made it a point to have the ocean be a major part of her life too. So unfortunately, Leon, I think you're stuck.
Yeah.
I think you're in it. At least you know you'll get free boards.
That's right. That's cool. So to kind of wrap up, what I like to do is to the nature of the name of the podcast, This Ocean Life, which really is kind of a metaphor for looking at the ocean as an extension of your life, so to speak. You know, like you have your ocean life, I have my ocean life, and you know, all of us, we have like this ocean life. So what does that mean, that phrase mean to you? How do you kind of characterize your response or philosophy or sort of emotion around just this ocean, the ocean life that you live, you know, and plan to live? It's kind of a open-ended question, but I pose this to everybody to put them on the spot. What this ocean life, kind of your ocean life, means to you?
I guess it's more just this is life.
Yeah.
You know,
like, the ocean's part of your life.
Yeah,
it's like,
I mean, my wife and I joke about it all the time, and some of my friends too, like, this ocean life is such a blessing, but in so many ways it's such a curse,
because
just think about all the amazing places you could possibly live if you didn't have to be right next to the ocean. You know what I mean? I don't know, I think it's been ingrained in me since I was a little kid kicking and screaming with my, you know, my dad taking me surfing and me just thinking that he was out to kill me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, but just being, after that, being so appreciative, even as a little kid,
yeah,
that he would like take the time to take me right. surfing, yeah. you know, even though I was such a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
And like, and then to just know that was kind of an important, it was just gonna be part of my life,
yeah.
you know? And I think it's just a part of me.
Yeah.
And I even tried, I like moved to the middle of the country for like 2 years to see if I could hack it,
really?
Like away from the ocean, and did it and made it through, and then realized I never ever wanted to do that ever again. Never needed to do it ever
yeah.
again.
Yeah.
But because I just knew that it just wasn't me, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
But it's just part of who I am.
Yeah.
Like I'm in the water every day.
Yeah.
In some form.
Right.
Which is kind of crazy.
It's just like, I mean, yeah. Yeah.
And how lucky am I to have that?
Indeed. You know? And now that's the thing, is we are so lucky.
Yeah.
To be exposed to it at an early age with parents, family, some people find it on their own, but then once yeah. you get it, when you're able to allow the ocean to be part of your life because you have a lifestyle that's built around it, you know, friends,
yeah.
community, etc. Yeah, it is really special.
And like, how ridiculous is it that we get to go like play on like glorified pool toys all day?
I know, it's true.
Or like, yeah. or not all day, but like every day
yeah.
or every other day.
Yeah.
Like, we get to just go play.
And a pool like, toy for all occasions, like
yeah.
small waves, big waves, yeah, flat waves, you know.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
It's
like, so just true. When you think you've got it, when you're like having a bad day or something's going wrong, you're like, oh, we get to just go play.
Yeah, get in the ocean for 15 minutes
yeah.
and then I guarantee you'll feel better. I know.
Yeah.
I know that's true. All right. Well, Nick, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Good luck, Molokai to Oahu 2018.
Thank you.
Coming up in a few weeks. We'll be tracking you on the online route tracker of the athletes.
Yeah.
We'll post
yeah.
some stuff.
The most boring sporting event to watch ever.
Almost like paint drying, but
yeah, exactly.
unless you are, yeah. But it is yeah. fun to track.
5 hours of it.
Yeah. The show notes, we'll post Instagram links, links to Shearwater paddleboards. Check Nick out for boards, paddleboards, surfboards, amazing stuff. We'll throw some videos on YouTube of you paddling, etc. And wish you the best, and thank you for being here, man.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you to everybody that's helped me along the way, and because so much of this is due to other people's help. So thanks to everybody, and thank you so much, Josh.
Right on.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast episode. If you liked what you heard, please give us a good rating in your podcast library. We really appreciate it. You can also find images and videos from our guests on the thisoceanlife.tv Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook pages. Now get out there and enjoy your ocean life.